This segment is brought to you courtesy of Caribbean American Weekly, a newspaper owned and operated by Caribbean Americans. Read the latest edition at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To like us on Facebook, to advertise or to subscribe, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To advertise with the Caribbean American Weekly publication, for freelance assignments, to distribute at your business place, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. Or to meet a marketing representative at our office, call 718-771-0988. That's 718-771-0988. A very warm welcome to everyone. We are joined by an extra special guest, Mr. Brian Lander, who is NYC Controller-Elect. Welcome, sir. Good to have you here with us.
Thank you so much, Pearl. Wonderful to be here.
It's our pleasure. So, most people don't seem to know what the role of the controller is. They think it's just a stepping stone to run for mayor. What exactly is the role of the New York City controller?
Thank you for asking that question. It's wonderful to be here with you on People, Power, and Politics. And you're right. As I went around the city running, people are like, the controller. We even made a funny commercial where Alana Glazer, a comedian, is like, a controller is a stroller with a computer built into it. But, you know, the controller is our city's budget watchdog, our long-term fiduciary to make sure that our public sector workers get their pensions, and also our city's chief accountability officer to make sure city government is keeping its promises, that agencies are working well, that we're spending our money wisely. Mm-hmm. And that can mean looking at a range of things, like, are we spending our money more equally? If we want to have a recovery from this pandemic that works for all communities, we need a controller that's looking out for all communities.
Excellent. So, talking about looking out for all communities, what are your top priorities for your administration in the first 100 days?
Yeah, well, let me talk about something we just did this past week, even before we get to the 100 days,
okay. Because... good to see you are working already.
Yeah. Well, I'm in my last few days in the New York City Council, and this week, after being a sponsor of this bill for 10 years, I finally got to vote to allow our neighbors who are not citizens to vote in New York City elections. Obviously, lots of folks from the Caribbean, you know, who are here, who have been here, who are working, who are taking care of kids, who are working construction, who are delivering food, who are fixing our city. Even though they're paying taxes and working hard and might have lived here for a lot of years, they can't vote. And people who are here working hard, being good neighbors, they deserve to have a say in who's their council member or mayor. So this vote we took, called Our City, Our Vote, is going to add at least 800,000 people to the rolls. Mm-hmm. And I feel really proud of that. You know, the idea of holding our city accountable together. City's whole history is as an immigrant city. So that was really exciting, and I'm thrilled that we did that. And now we get to go into office knowing, all right, when we do an audit, when we pay attention to contracts, we ought to be thinking about everybody who's here in the city. So so I'm gonna bring that forward. And then as I get into office, look, job one has to be focused on helping us come out of this pandemic in ways that are stronger and vibrant, but also more equal than we were before. We saw so clearly in this pandemic the consequences of racial and economic inequality in who lived and died in the pandemic, and who got healthcare, and who had to work without PPE, and who are nurses or frontline workers or folks working on the subways, on and on and on. So we better remember that as we are spending this American Rescue Plan funding we got from Washington and this new infrastructure money that's coming, that's a real opportunity to put resources in communities that make sure what's on the other side of the pandemic is better. But that's going to take a real watchful eye from the controller's office. So I'm going to set up a tracking system to watch to make sure those American Rescue Plan funds and infrastructure funds are spent smartly, wisely, but also that they really get out to the communities that need them most, that the jobs get to people who need them, that their living wage or union jobs to make sure they create real opportunities. So make sure that money is spent wisely. Set up a great system to audit city agencies to make sure they're really doing their jobs well. And, you know, I was out in Southeast Queens a couple of weeks ago, and people there were just talking to me. I thought I'd hear more about a wider range of other issues, and I heard a lot. But the number one issue was people are so upset about the garbage and the illegal dumping and the sanitation. That means there's rats all over their communities. So just getting government to do the basics and to do the basics in every community is a real focus of mine. And then finally, I want to get us on a better path of thinking about what crises are coming in the long term. You know, we weren't ready for the pandemic, and we paid for it in the lives of over 30,000 of our neighbors. We know that the climate crisis is coming. We saw that in Hurricane Ida. We saw that in Hurricane Sandy. We know that it'll be frontline communities, communities of color, that will bear the brunt of it unless we do more now to make sure we're building a resilient city with principles of environmental justice in mind. So those are a few of the priorities to get started.
Excellent. So while you were campaigning, you had some very bold and progressive ideas, which we're going to be discussing right now, one of which is a public bank for the people. So what exactly is a public bank, and why does New York City need one?
Absolutely. So when you think about what a bank is an opportunity where there's some money that is out there that isn't doing anything right at the moment. How does that get in the hands of a small business person who wants to start a restaurant or a business or a nonprofit that's going to serve their community, or somebody who's got a chance to buy a home or a co-op? How do we get the money in their hands? Well, the city of New York actually holds a lot of resources. We hold the money we collect in taxes. You know, some of it we're going to pay out in the payroll, but some of it is going to be there for a while. And the city's got a lot of other assets. So we could be using the city's assets to support minority and women-owned businesses, small business creation, co-op, and home ownership. But unfortunately, private banks, they're in the business, of course, of making money. They are owned by shareholders. And so they're not looking to provide affordable banking accounts and savings accounts to low-income people, because that doesn't make them much money. And they, of course, for a business, would rather give a loan to a big business than a small business. They don't necessarily have MWBE, minority women-owned business enterprise goals. So a public bank would take some of the assets and resources that the city has that were, and saying, rather than put them in a private lending institution where they might get lent out to Amazon or Facebook or Walmart, why don't we have a public bank that says we're going to lend those resources out for things that will make money, but that are consistent with our values for a thriving and more inclusive New York City.
That makes sense. I don't know why someone didn't come up with it before.
Well, I can claim the ideas. That's an idea that there's a great campaign in New York City. The New York Public Banking NYC campaign is doing a great job of running this campaign, and I'm proud to be supporting it.
Okay, great. So the next idea that you had was the building opportunities for MWBEs, which we've seen from administration to administration. You know, the figures, the percentages are really not what they should be. So what is your plan of action?
Yeah, let's talk first about just how bad they are. The current comptroller, Scott Stringer, put out a report that found that over the last year, fewer than 4% of the city's more than $20 billion annual contracting budget went to minority and women-owned businesses. And even of what did, white women who deserve their share, don't get me wrong, and Asian New Yorkers who deserve their share, don't get me wrong, get much more than black women or black men. We're a city that's majority people of color, that's majority women. Unless anyone would say, I think it's the white men that could do a better job delivering our paper or our sanitary, different kinds of services the city contracts for. And so many of those are human services, our childcare, our elder care. So we must do better achieving MWBE equity. So I'm going to keep putting out the annual report that Controller does that holds every city agency, including the Controller's office, because we put out some contracts accountable for getting better every year. And then I think there's some opportunities. One thing we have to do in the Controller's office and is work with the mayor to get contracts paid on time. Right now, when you get a contract from the city, it might take a year before you get paid.
That's too long for a small
business. And obviously,
if
you're a small business that doesn't have a lot of capital, you can't wait all that time. So we want to reduce the amount of time it takes to contract with the city and then provide some, this is where that public bank comes in, provide some lines of credit or startup capital that could especially help minority and women-owned businesses get the capital they need to get started so they could even bid on a city contract.
Okay. So the third idea was, we know that New York City is a city of immigrants, is very diverse, and you spoke about supporting New York City's immigrant future. I'm happy that you're part of getting that bill passed. That was actually one of my questions for you. So how do you intend to make a difference overall?
Absolutely. And this is a big deal. I know we talked about it before, but there are a few other places. I think Montgomery County, Maryland may do it, a couple of small places. And we used to do it here in New York City in our school board elections.
Yes.
But there's not anywhere else of nearly the scale, a big city that has said, you know, our immigrant neighbors ought to be able to vote in our municipal elections. And, you know, I've heard some people, we had a robust debate on the floor of the council, and some people said, well, you're supposed to, you know, work to become a citizen. But Republicans in Congress are making it impossible for people to become citizens. We're blocking a pathway to citizenship for 11 million Americans, people who are here. So I feel really proud of this, and hopefully it'll help energize our democracy for everyone. Like, this is a matter of justice, because it's fair if you're paying your taxes, if you're working, if you're sending your kids to school, if you're riding our buses and subways, to have a voice. But it's also, as especially your listeners know, what's driving a thriving future for New York City is our diversity. Like the fact that people want to come here and create and offer their culture and their ideas. Mm-hmm. That's how it's a thriving city for everyone, white folks and everybody else included. So it's just good common sense to say, how do we make this immigrant city more fair and thriving for immigrant New Yorkers? So that's a lot of things. That's more investment opportunities in startup small businesses, obviously a real pathway to the middle class for immigrants is to start up a small business. Let's make it not take so much time to get every license that you need. Let's provide access to capital so people could borrow. I'd like to see a new round of affordable and cooperative homeownership programs like the old Mitchell Llama program. Back in the day, we used to use a lot of the money for affordable housing to create co-ops and homeownership opportunities, but now almost all of it goes to for-profit private developers to build rental housing. And, you know, we need rental housing and we want to provide housing for low-income people, but for working-class families who can't afford to buy something, I think that's a real strong opportunity. That's obviously not only for immigrants, but again, for a lot of immigrants across many, many generations, back to when my great-grandparents came to the country, being able to buy a home is a really important
pathway. That's the American dream, home ownership and owning a business.
Yeah.
So you mentioned affordable housing, and I want to bring something up to you right now, because I think the situation is such that we need low-income housing, because affordable housing, when one says that, it's affordable to whom? You know, most people really cannot afford it.
Yeah.
So I think we really need to be looking at low-income housing. Yeah. What are your thoughts on
that? Well, absolutely. I mean, this is where that we do need a range, because we want people who are homeless or getting evicted from their homes everyone should have a right to housing. Right. And we need low-income housing so the lowest-income families could have a place to live. I do think there's room for programs that provide a pathway to homeownership for working-class families who might not be quite as low-income but aren't going to be able to buy anything in the city given how expensive it is. What I'd like to see a shift is right now about 80% of our subsidy dollars and even city-owned land that we use for quote-unquote affordable housing programs goes to for-profit private developers to build rental housing. And then we can argue about how deeply affordable it should be and how long it should stay affordable, but we're already creating wealth for a small handful of people. The model that some people call social housing, which is limited equity co-ops, community land trusts, and nonprofit community development organizations, when if we use city subsidy on those organizations, now that housing is a resource for the community or creates an ownership opportunity. And because those are mission-driven or nonprofit or cooperative organizations, they're not looking for the long-term bottom line. Mm-hmm. And so they're not always pushing to make it a little higher income. And then we can truly make sure we get to the low-income families that need it the most.
Okay, excellent. So you mentioned your predecessor earlier on in the interview, and he gave out a lot of grades and reports, and there wasn't, you know, actual solutions to balance that. I know that you mentioned that you're going to keep the agencies honest and continue with those reports and grades, which is good. Do you have a plan to affect change?
This is such a good question. You know, I mentioned that one of the functions of the comptroller's office is to be the city's chief accountability officer. But the purpose of that is to help make government actually run better, not just to put out reports that pile up in an office or get some headlines in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. The goal is to fix those problems, to get the trash picked up or the loans out to small businesses or the affordable housing programs created. And that's a challenge because the comptroller's office is independent. You do the audits, and there's a certain kind of built-in tension with the mayor or the administration. But absolutely, we have a set of ideas for how we can do that that job, but in a way that works thoughtfully with the administration and with the agencies. A lot of times they know what area needs improving. So there's opportunities at the beginning of an audit to say, let's talk about an area we're going to look at so that when we release our findings, the commissioner will stand up together with the controller and say, we're diving in to fix them. Or I'll give another example. I've heard from people about agencies that aren't doing what they need to in terms of language access, providing their services in the array of languages that they're required to under the law, but that takes some extra work and maybe they didn't get the resources to do it or they haven't prioritized it. But rather than come in and do it like a pop quiz, we could first say to New Yorkers, what are the agencies that you're having the most problem with, and find out, here's a program, here's a site, here's a city agency that isn't providing services in Bangla or in Creole or in the languages that we needed to. And then we go to those agencies and we say, look, you know, people said that you're not providing this service in the right languages. We're going to come audit you in 9 months. We'd like to give you an A. So you got 9 months to fix that, get that website interpreted, do what's necessary. So that's a model of auditing that, instead of being like a pop quiz, is an opportunity to improve and then get credit for it. In this spirit of trying to partner with the administration to do things better, the mayor-elect and I announced a task force earlier this month on the challenge of getting our nonprofit human service providers paid on time. And for a lot of this recent administration, I feel like there's been a lot of finger pointing. Everyone knows this is a problem, but if you go to the mayor's office of contracts, they'll say the problem is with the controller. And if you go to the controller, they say, well, we don't even have that contract yet, so how can we register it? The problem is with the mayoral agencies. And we wanted to show that we're gonna roll up our sleeves together to fix problems. So the mayor-elect and I are co-convening a task force. Our teams are working together. We're gonna make it so you don't have to wait a year to get paid for that child care service or that elder care or that meal
delivery. So I love very much what are you saying? And I'm going to be watching.
Good, good, good. Yes, hold us accountable, please.
And I'm going to hold you accountable and bring you back to talk about it.
You can't be the chief accountability officer if you're not going to be held accountable.
Exactly.
For sure.
But I absolutely love what you're saying. So, as New York City Comptroller, what are Brad Lander's plans to specifically help the Black and Brown communities regarding health disparities, job creation, and small business survival during and post COVID-19?
Hear, hear. So first, let's say we have to call it out. We have to insist on racial justice. We have to start by saying we see the ways that Black and Caribbean and Latino communities have been excluded from opportunities, that and that has real consequences in COVID, in our schools, in business opportunity, in pay disparities, in contracting. So there's a certain function of being really honest about it and then mapping out a path to really do something about it. I've been really inspired in how to think about this by this great book by Heather McGee called The Sum of Us, where she looks at the ways that racism has been deployed by people in power to provide, in many cases, white working class communities with a story by which to understand things that has meant, and she gives this great example. Heather shows how a wide number of communities in the South, including Montgomery, Alabama, when they were ordered to integrate their swimming pools, rather than do that in a way that would have offered everyone the opportunity to swim, shut down the pool altogether so nobody had a place to swim. That's racism denying everybody something that they need. She shows how, on the one hand, we have to hold that equity lens up and see disparities because it's a matter of justice and we're violating our fundamental values and principles. But on the other hand, if we can build an economy that's genuinely equal and inclusive, it's more thriving for everyone because many more people can create new businesses, can succeed, mm-hmm. you have fewer problems, and down the line. So I recommend that book, The Sum of Us, to anyone. And
I wrote it down for me to read.
We had a session during the campaign with Heather McGee, with public advocate Jumaane Williams, who I want to talk about in a minute because I'm very proud to be supporting a Caribbean New Yorker for governor.
We're going to talk about that after.
All right, very good. And with the Albany city auditor, a woman named Dorsey Applers, first black woman auditor of Albany, and we called it Accounting for Racial Justice. Mm-hmm. And what we showed is that there are tools that you can use to audit city agencies for disparities on exactly the things you ask about, on healthcare disparities, on workforce development, on pay equity, and then map out a roadmap for what to do about it. And there are some good opportunities. I'll just give one. I had a Zoom this week, a Zoom town hall with Senator Schumer on the infrastructure bill. And that infrastructure bill, for the first time, takes an approach to the jobs that will be created that it brings an equity lens that says we want to make sure that people of color can get the contracts, can get the jobs, can get the union apprenticeships, mm-hmm. so that those public resources can be an opportunity to right historic wrongs and create more opportunity. And we're going to hire for a position that we call Chief Equity Auditor. Okay. The biggest bureau in the Comptroller's Office is the Audits Bureau. We got about 150 people doing audits. And we talked already about how to make those audits more strategic in helping agencies improve and not just gotcha. We also want to do some audits that focus in new ways. And one of them is to have an equity audit team that precisely says what we're going to do is look at an agency and say, how do we understand how it's doing on equity grounds? What are its disparities? And what are some recommendations for how it could improve? And that could be H&H when dealing with healthcare disparities. That could be Administration for Children's Services. You know, like I think there's good reason to believe that we are much more likely to have your kid taken away if you're a person of color in the city. That can be our workforce development programs and say it is an appropriate goal for an audit to look at racial disparities, say what the audit finds is that here's the difference between where the contracts are going or how much people are getting paid, and here's a set of recommendations for fixing it.
Excellent. So let's move to the race for governor.
Okay.
Governor of New York. I know you're excited to talk about that.
Yes. Well, and actually, I was just with Jumaane Williams this morning at a great rally for CUNY. We're fighting for a new deal for CUNY with the union PSC CUNY that represents the CUNY mm-hmm. faculty and CUNY Rising, a great student movement. And Jumaane's out there. He's a CUNY. So Jumaane Williams is a CUNY graduate. He went to Brooklyn College, went to Brooklyn to grad school at CUNY. He's a real champion. As your listeners will know, Tish James decided this week to run for re-election as attorney general. And
right.
she is, of course, a great champion for all New Yorkers. She's been a great attorney general. I'm excited about her continuing her fight against Trump and for justice. I had already, though, endorsed Jumaane Williams for governor.
Yes.
Jumaane is someone who I've just had the great blessing to work with now all 12 years in my time in the city council. We knew each other already because we were both housing and tenants' rights activists.
Okay.
So we knew each other from when he ran Tenants and Neighbors and I ran the Fifth Avenue Committee. We worked together to pass the Community Safety Act to combat discriminatory stop and frisk when the NYPD were stopping and frisking over 600,000 black and Latino men a year. There weren't even that many black and brown men in New York, men in New York City. 90% who hadn't done anything at all. So Jumaane was the leader on that campaign. I was proud to be his partner in passing the Community Safety Act. We've worked together on so much other legislation, the Fair Chance Act to give people who were formerly incarcerated the opportunity to get the jobs and housing that they need to succeed when coming back, fighting for tenants' rights, something that we both worked on together, fighting for CUNY. And so I'm excited right now. I'm about to, the controller's office is in the municipal building at 1 Center Street, and so is the public advocate's office. So we're going to turn that municipal building into a house of justice. The House of Justice is Reverend Sharpton's, but we'll make it a municipal building of justice. But I'm excited about his campaign for governor and the way that he's articulating a really bold, progressive vision for what's possible in New York State. You know, this is a moment for pushing further on healthcare, on public higher education, on job and opportunity and business creation. And I'm really excited to support him. And I can't say the fact that he's a child of the Caribbean is the only reason that I'm supporting him. But it is an awful lot of fun to march down the parkway with him during Carnival on the West Indian Day Parade. And I'm excited to be excited to do that in the future.
Okay, great. So, Mr. Lander, it was such a pleasure speaking with you. Love what you've been saying. Very excited about your administration. And we look forward to having you back again to, you know, as your term goes on, to bring you back to talk about all your programs, and we wish you the very, very best.
Thank you so much. I really look forward to this partnership. You know, I've gotten to know a lot of different communities in my district. For example, there's a big Bangladeshi community, but I actually don't represent too many people from the Caribbean. So I'm excited to learn. So I hope people will reach out to our office and say, here's something you have to know about what's going on in Grenada or in Trinidad, or let's make sure we're helping our brothers and sisters in Haiti still struggling after the challenges that they've had, or in Jamaica or Barbados or any of the islands, so or in the neighborhoods throughout the city. So I love being on your show, and I hope people will really stay in touch with our office. As you started by asking, not that many people really know what the controller does, but we want to be partners to be the budget watchdog, the long-term fiduciary, and the chief accountability officer for New York City. And we can only do it by working with you.
All right. So we're here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This was great.
You're welcome. This segment was brought to you courtesy of Caribbean American Weekly, a newspaper owned and operated by Caribbean Americans. Read the latest edition at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To like us on Facebook, to advertise, or to subscribe, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. To advertise with the Caribbean American Weekly publication, for freelance assignments, to distribute at your business place, visit us at www.cawnyc.com. That's www.cawnyc.com. Or to meet a marketing representative at our office, call 718-771-0988. That's 718-771-0988.